Hi Gwen, how are you?
How are you?
I'm good. How are
I'm
you?
good. I'm real good.
Early morning there, is it?
No, it's at 10 o'clock.
All right, okay. All right. Oh, of course, all your clocks went forward a week ago, didn't they?
Yes. Are your clocks going forward this month?
They're going forward on Sunday morning, yeah. So
Okay.
we'll be back to our normal difference. This time of year is always strange because I'm constantly missing meetings in the States at this time of the year because the like said Tucson goes off. Tucson does its own thing. I don't know what's wrong with people in Tucson.
Tucson doesn't change at all. It just
That's my point.
But see,
it's like you, Dennis.
we're always in the present moment. Oh,
Oh,
dear
that's
me,
right.
dear me. I mean, there's no time, you know, just now. It's always now. So
Yes.
okay. All right. Okay.
I had to say that.
What can one say? Hello, Liz. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
Good to see you. Good to see you all. Oh.
Nice and sunny in the Alps today,
It's
Willie.
it is sunny and it's just about possible to sit outside for a short while. It's been sunny here now for a couple of weeks, but the wind would literally slice you in two. Very,
Wow.
very cold. Bitterly cold. And
Actually,
where
right.
and sorry,
Oh,
Dennis?
I was going to say it's raining here in the desert in Tucson, so that's kind of rare. You don't usually get rain this time of the year.
It's
So,
raining in strange places around the world. If you see what's
yeah,
going on in Australia at the
Australia
moment,
is
yeah.
getting pretty bad. Yeah.
You dry or wet at the moment, Liz?
It is absolutely gorgeous.
All right, well, there's
It's
a.
beautiful. It's sunny. There's that just a tang of spring in the air, and all the daffodils are out, and the birds are just starting to nest and establish territory. It's fabulous.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I'm
Yeah.
toying with the idea of planting stuff in the coming week or so, but I don't know yet. A bit early here. We've had.
Our potatoes will go in at the weekend.
All right. Okay. All right. It's not a competition, Liz. You do know that, don't you?
It's too cold, it would be silly to put your potatoes in.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's just what's appropriate. But
Yeah.
here it's the soil's ready for it.
No, we're not ready for it at all yet. We've another couple of weeks, I would say, to go. So, how are people?
Hello.
Hello, Elizabeth. How are you? Good to see you.
Nice to meet you.
I don't know who GM is.
So we scare all the guys away.
Oh,
I
yes.
another man fly.
Yeah.
Why?
Bunch of wimps, you know.
Powerful
They just can't handle this stuff, you know. That
women.
they need to get in touch with their feminine side.
You know, it's interesting when you tune into webinars, especially spiritually related webinars. It seems to be 98% women, 2% men, and it astounds me because you would think by now in 2020 we'd be kind of beyond the gender thing, and it's interesting that we're still kind of moving through all that.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware there was that either. I thought there were men, more men.
It's the exact inverse of how the corporate world works, isn't it? It's weird. I think men are afraid to expose their vulnerabilities, or at least they think they are, which of course is nine tenths of the problem, or actually ten
Yeah.
tenths of the problem.
So are women. I mean, we think that maybe women are not. Women are also afraid to show their vulnerability. It's not just the men's stuff.
Today is what? Today is Wednesday. I've spent my week on the phone to women so far. It just as it had, just by pure coincidence. And I've had a lot of vulnerabilities exposed to me so far this week. We have another man. We're not outnumbered, or we're nearly not outnumbered anymore, Dennis.
Yeah, I wasn't worried about it, but
I was beginning to get stressed.
No, I was just going to say it's the theme of the week, right? Mm.
Yeah, it's a funny one. I was talking to somebody a couple of days ago, and the individual in question, who obviously by definition, given what I just said, was a woman, was saying to me, I'm anxious, I'm stressed, I'm worried, I can't sleep at night. Big long litany of stuff. I said to her, there's a silver bullet. She said, no, there isn't. I said, yes, there is a silver bullet. I said, the only problem is you have to shoot yourself every day. You know what silver bullet I'm talking about. Shoot yourself multiple times during the course of the day. Spray yourself with gunfire. Anyway, sorry. Sorry. I've resolved to stay quiet. I was going to say relatively quiet. I'm not actually sure what that means. I've resolved to say less and listen more today.
You know, I was kind of ruminating on you put out a video, Willie, a couple days ago on the stress-related topic, and thinking about how we tend to get what we focus on, and oftentimes we focus more on what we don't want than what we do want. You know, we focus more on, I want to get rid of stress rather than I would, you know, love to be in joy or in the flow. You know, it seems to be oftentimes framed in the negative of what we don't want. And there was an interesting article this morning in the New York Times on how a recent study was done that in the USA, they were talking about NPR and CNN and several of the major media news organizations have statistically focused more on the negative and the positive, you know, in the reporting of so-called news. Even when it's a positive, it could be positive news, it's spun in a negative way. You know, that more people are being vaccinated for COVID. However, the variant continues to rampage Europe or whatever. I'm just kind of making this up, but we do this.
It's all right, Dennis. So are the media.
Right. Well, we do this to ourselves all the time. Where I'm going with this is we're so vulnerable, and most people are so impressionable about what they hear and haven't really empowered themselves, I think, to realize the power you have to kind of create your own reality with your own beliefs and your own thinking. So the default is just to kind of get sucked into the media, your friends, what's in the newspaper. And before you know it, you're stressed out. So where did that stress come from? You know, you really can't blame it. You can't be a victim to the world around us, in my opinion. And I'm just throwing that out there as kind of jumpstart our conversation. But I think oftentimes we don't empower ourselves, and we kind of go with the default of what, quote, what people are saying, what the media is telling us, what the government's telling us, what our institutions, religion, you name it, politics. And then we create these belief systems based on what we're told rather than, you know, what maybe really is. And then we stress ourselves out over all these thoughts and beliefs that we've kind of created. So anybody have that experience?
There's a sketch that's, it's some famous American comedian actually, where somebody goes to see him and he's playing a psychiatrist, and they're telling him about all of their woes, and he just says, just stop it. And the answer to everything is just stop it. Yeah. And the more I get into this, the more I realize that actually it is just stop it. Yeah. And the silver bullet technique.
Absolutely. Know, shoot yourself.
But to stop it, you have to be at a place where you can see it. And if you don't see it's happening, you can't stop it. So.
Yeah.
Actually, Dennis, that's a really good point, because the lady I just mentioned a minute ago, who was anxious, fearful, blah, 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 couldn't sleep at night. She said she's lying awake at 4 o'clock in the morning thinking about a blue ball that was in her back garden, in absolute rubbish. And she said, I was lying there for an hour. She said, I wasn't stressed out even. I mean, this is pre-stress. She said, I wasn't stressed out. She said, but I was thinking about things that I realized just how crazy I was. And I said to myself, at least I'm aware of what's going on in my head. And I think that's a very important point. I think most people are so unaware that they don't even know they don't even know that they might have a choice, according to what Liz has said, that they could stop it. They just don't know. But I think there is something more fundamental running against us that we have to take responsibility for individually ourselves. And that is, yes, you can listen to the media. And of course, the media will skew things negatively, because good news never sold newspapers, the old adage. Of course, various different people wanting to exercise power over us will do that in a negative rather than a positive way. But ultimately, from an evolutionary perspective, we're wired to see the glass as half empty. It's actually how we're wired, because if we were wired to see the glass half full 10,000 years ago and a tiger rustled in the bushes, if we were in a nice, positive glass half full mood, we might say to ourselves, oh, I wonder, is that Liz from the next encampment? I haven't seen her for a couple of weeks. Looking forward to chatting with her. And the next thing, this man or woman eating beast leaps from the bushes and I'm utterly unprepared. We're actually skewed negatively internally ourselves. And then, as you use the word default 3 or 4 times, that's our default situation until we take responsibility for our own state of mind. The old silver bullet again.
But I think, you know, we're in a position as the programmers of our programs. And if we keep reverting to old operating systems that are defaulting us to a certain way of perceiving, if we realize we can upgrade our perception, our reality, in a sense, by realizing that we're the ones who are creating the interpretation of whatever happens, you know, this coffee cup could be half empty or half full. Now, Willie, you're saying the default is it's going to be half full, and it's scarcity.
It's
half empty.
Half empty, yeah.
Right. And I like to probably see it more as half full, because I tend to interpret things in a more positive light than but we're doing this constantly, and we're not even aware that we do that. And I think these judgments we make then impact that quote stress level, or whatever you want to call it, that creates that pushback, that conflict that gets us all into trouble, and probably causes physical health problems. I'm kind of convinced, after I've read a lot of the work of Deepak Chopra and some other folks out there who are pretty well documented how the mind and the body are working together. And Willie, you talk about this all the time. If we're pushing against and we're stressed in the mind, it's causing a chemical hormonal imbalance in the body that is more likely to result in cardiovascular disease or cancer or some other physical condition. So, you know, it's nice to be positive, but it's actually probably more of a matter of life and death for some of us. We don't realize how powerful we are to impact, you know, not only our own health, but the people around us too, you know, because, you know, we're kind of the role models for them, whether we realize it or not. So I'm going to be quiet. As Willie mentioned, we're not going to try to talk so much, but anybody want to share?
No, hold on. Sorry, Gwen. No, I was going to say I'm going back on my word, but Gwen, sorry, go on.
Gwen, I think you're muted.
You're muted.
Yeah, I am. And I was, So, Dennis, just to your point about having an influence on other people, I actually feel what I know is that we're all energies. So if we're sending out positive energy or energy that is, it's positive, we impact people around us without even our words. It just because we're all energy and we're all one. And so if we are embodying that energy, that positive energy, we are actually impacting people around us, our health, of course, but people around us with that energy. It's because we're all energy. Yeah.
Think as well, adding to the way, you know, whether it's your default for seeing the glass half empty or half full. From my experience, it's been about being almost trapped or encased in survival mode. So therefore, you end up living life a bit like a salmon that has to go and climb the waterfalls and struggle and fight until you reach that point of awareness whereby you suddenly become the poo stick and you completely change your life around and you end up letting go and just following where that energy then takes you without actually knowing where that's leading. I mean, the salmon tends to be on a mission with a purpose at the end and will die trying to get there. And even when they get there, they die. But whereas with the poo stick analogy, you just go with the flow, not actually, you have an idea of where you might be going, but not actually how you're going to get there. And so therefore you can then be of a state of mind where actually your success is every day because you live your life successfully every day.
I think
Elizabeth, sorry, Lynn, to get to you in a moment.
No problem.
If you want to go first, I don't mind, I can wait.
Anna, go on.
Okay. Go ahead. Just a couple of things that I'd like to share if that can help somebody. As an empath, one of the things I don't do is watch the news. I never watch the news, very rarely, because actually what news, especially if you're an empath, is not good for you. So what I tell people that I care about or my clients, my friends, I mean, I say you can do whatever you want. I mean, I never tell people what they should do. But not watching the news and staying away from negative people, even if they are in your own family, it's a big step to change your mindset. And many people are feeling some emotions that they cannot even explain because most of the time they're not even theirs. I mean, they're picking up emotions from other people and they think they're theirs and they're not. So first you have to really discern what are your emotions and make sure they are yours and not somebody else. And as far as the cliche of the glass half full, half empty, from my experience, some people don't even see the glass. They don't even see it. And I said, why keep it just half full? Why not add more water?
Yeah.
Because you're only like half full, half empty. No, why just make it fuller? I mean, you can add it. Why? So just I wanted to share that. I think it's always healthier and nicer and you're happier when you're feeling like you add a little more water or whatever you want to make that glass a little fuller instead of just keeping it in half. So if that can help, change the chip and change the, like you say, we wire them, we're like zombies, like everybody does the same thing. I mean, most of us. I mean, I've been a rebel since I was a little girl, so I was maybe out of the herd, but I think you can like rewire or just take the wire off, you know? So it's a matter of choice. And you just decide you want to stay in the negative aspects and whining and crying. And as I said, happiness is not to cry for what you don't have, but to enjoy and be grateful for what you have. And that changes a lot. When changing that mindset, changes a lot in your life. And then things around you change. Just my experience, if that can help.
Yeah.
Great. Lynn, I think you had something.
Yeah. I think what probably for me, one of my internal conflicts or whatever was always trying to figure out why things happened, or, you know, why certain things happened, how I had contributed to why maybe something happened or whatever, just trying to figure things out too much, you know, overthinking situations and events that have happened to me. So I think a game changer for me was on a couple of Willie's podcasts, he's mentioned that we're human beings, we just need to be. And so it just sort of clicked with me then. I think that sometimes things just are, you know, and you don't actually achieve anything by trying to maybe figure things out or overthink things too much. And that removes a whole lot of stress, you know. So that was something that I've been repeating to myself a lot. Really helpful.
As Greg, I think, is...
Yeah, so I've just jumped in, and I had a little trouble getting in, but I always love these conversations because it sparks these thoughts in my head that I'm like, oh my gosh. As everyone was talking, I was wondering, does it really matter, to use the metaphor, if the glass is half empty or if the glass is half full? The glass is just the glass, and the glass is simply being receptive, no matter what it is. It's like, and it in the moment, it reacts to however the world around it changes. So if someone's got water in it or whatever beverage that you choose, then it fulfills its purpose. If it has nothing in it, it fulfills its purpose by being receptive. So I think that's what I'm trying to think. I know that we don't have to do anything to be, but I just how to make sure that I am continually open and have that space available for whatever occurs next, and be, I guess it's being in the moment, so.
I think, Greg, that's a good point, because it really, in my mind, it drops a concept of judging everything that happens. To say it's half empty and half full is a judgment, right? So if you accept it as it is, you know, you realize we're all probably unconsciously judging everything that happens around us. And if we can get out of a judgmental, pure awareness, witnessing, many different words into that zone, which is the flow, then we're experiencing things maybe more as they are versus our thoughts and our perceptions and our judgments of what we think they are versus what they may really be. I think, Willie, it's time for you to jump in, because I'm getting a little over my head with this, and I know you're dying to say something.
I'm doing really well. I think if you go back to Lynn's point, we are human beings. We're not human thinkings.
Doings.
And we're not, you know, to go back to Shelley's point, we're not even human doings. We need to actually go with the flow and to go back to Greg's point, see what actually happens next. And that requires turning up to the here and now, to being. So if I think the glass is half empty and I try to supplant that that thought with, oh no, the glass is half full, I'm trying to supplant a negative thought with a positive thought, but it's still only a thought. And I'm not a human thinking, I'm a human being. And I will always only be something much less than a human being if I'm thinking at all. As you said, and both Greg and yourself, Dennis, have said, if I'm judging. The real issue we have until we take responsibility for the choice we all have, and a couple of people have used that word choice now, the real issue we have is that we're not judging what's going on moment to moment, because we're using our stored knowledge to understand and try to make sense of the here and now. When we're on default mode, we're actually prejudging everything that was going on. We're awfully prejudiced people. We learned our prejudices when we were 2 or 3. We're most prejudiced when it comes to our impression of ourselves. And it is our impression of ourselves that actually in the modern world is the trigger for all the stress that we have. Because ultimately, if you look at how cognitive appraisal explains how stress actually mechanically happens in the brain, we always break down at the point when we say to ourselves, am I up to the task in hand? And because we all have perceived inadequacies about ourselves, more so than perceived strengths because of our predisposition to thinking negative thoughts, we're always going to trigger the stress response until we make the choice to be rather than to prejudge or to think. And, you know, to come back to Gwen's point, if I'm going around as a stressed individual, I am spreading the stress. I have a client in Brazil who's, and I think I may have mentioned her the last time we were on, who goes into the plant that she works in, that she heads up, and says that her job is to spread the calm and ultimately on a good day to spread the joy. Because as we said a couple of sessions ago, people are looking all the time. So if I am down, if I have a cloud over my head, people are going to come down to my level. If I am there fully available, if I'm so present, if I am so being, I can literally give my energy out freely. That's a totally different ball game for the people around me. But it's about taking responsibility. It's about making the right choice. And you know, who said that glass was even a glass?
Yeah, Willie, I think you're getting into some of the root causes of, you know, we're talking about these insights on an individual personal level, but if you look at all the so-called challenges and problems in the world right now, whether it's the environment, whether it's political, you can see the collective of either countries or countries together doing what we've just been talking about at this collective level. We've got these beliefs and judgments and prejudices of the color of our skin and gender, and we, you know, it's kind of being thrown back in our face, it seems like to me right now, whether it's social media, that if something happens, you know, we've had two mass shootings in the last 2 weeks in the United States, and now the Congress is, you know, on gun control. You know, it's more than that. It's more than just the incidents. It's really coming to an awareness of how
they will show up. At this page, you will need to open the link that you have here. These are the plan documents, the agreement between you and Kathy about this grant.
Somebody is listening to instructions on how to open the link. Would you ever mute yourself?
Let's say you want to, you need some extra money or some.
All right.
There we go. Go with the flow.
Absolutely.
So I guess all I'm trying to say is I think we're on to something with this discussion that goes way beyond just our personal lives. I think this mental, Willie, again, I'm going to look to you for the right words, but we've created this fabric of judgment and interpretation that is not only creates stress for us personally, but you know, across the whole planet. And I think there's some shifts going on, some ahas even collectively right now about how we are creating our own issues, if you want to use the word issues, you know, across the planet, not because of something out there that we're a victim to, but how we're actually kind of self-creating these things by our own concepts and beliefs and perceptions. I don't know if this is making sense of what I'm trying to convey. Feel free, anybody, to jump in.
Dennis, I think where you're coming from is that when people disagree these days, they seem to jump to from we are disagreeing with each other to you're against me completely. Right. Agree with me, you know, so that people you have to either be fully in agreement with people or else you're not part of their tribe. And then, so it's polarity, you know, all over the world, you know, people are divided. Whereas sometimes it's just a difference of opinion on a particular issue. And I think that's where has that come from? That debate and respecting each other's opinions seems to be, it's either one or the other these days. That's why someone else mentioned there that they're not watching the news. I've kind of stopped as well because it was annoying me too much. Because there's very little, you know, just, I think everybody is entitled to make their own opinion based on true facts, and so it's a little bit hard to know, isn't it?
True facts.
As well, that's connected with a lot of that, from my own experience, is identity. And if you identify with something, label or a group of people or a type of person, then there are circumstances whereby which you feel that you may need to defend that identity. Part of it as well is that feeling that you're out of control and that you need to control others around you as well. There's an element of that also. And I think that, again, the manipulation for the news is to exacerbate that and exaggerate that polarity in almost so that it almost invites people to take up a cause, which although it may be honourable, in some instances it can be a righteous one, which then creates an ongoing chain of reactions.
Lisa, you want to say something?
Hi there. I just wanted to kind of go back to the energy type thing. And I don't know how to explain. I work with a lot of animals, particularly horses. And I've got a particular person who's really, really struggling with this horse. And it's just really hit home to me in the past few weeks how this person's doing physically exactly the same as what I'm doing and not really getting the results that she's after. And I've realised now that all I have to do is take hold of the horse and its whole energy changes, just because I don't think I get as anxious as she does, because she's wanting some kind of result from the horse and almost trying too hard to achieve it, and then get herself kind of wound up. And this is just directly affecting this horse so much. And it's taken me a few sessions with her to realise that all she really needs to do is change her energy levels, to not expect anything and to just wait and see what happens and not put pressure on herself to be able to do it right or wrong. But trying to teach that to somebody, I'm finding quite difficult, you know, especially if they don't understand about being more present and everything else. But it's just been such a slap in the face with me, with this particular horse, you know, it's so sensitive that, you know, just how we affect not just humans, but, you know, everything around us.
Well, we were talking right at the beginning of this conversation about planting potatoes. When the ground is warm enough to plant my potatoes, I will do what I do with all my plants every morning during the summer. I go out and talk to them. Because I know for a fact that me being present is actually spreading the joy, so to speak, as I mentioned earlier on. There's a lot of research in relation to the manner in which how I even feel emotions has an impact on the structure of the molecules of the liquid that is in that glass at the moment. There's a whole body of research on that from one of the universities in Tokyo. The extent to which, now it goes slightly further than I would suggest we might go in this conversation, that water has a consciousness. But water, being made up of energy in the same way as you and I are made up of energy, and the extent to which we're all connected as a result of being simply noodles of energy swimming around in universal noodles energy soup, the fact that we're all impacting each other, we need to let ourselves go. We need to let ourselves go, for example, of the expectation that I'll be able to master trotting around on a horse the first time I get up on a horse. I need to let go of my expectation that somebody who lives in the East End of Belfast is a horrible person because I'm a Catholic and he's a Protestant. I need to let go of all the prejudices that we're carrying around with us, because the prejudices are simply thoughts. You know, Dennis, you talked about the beliefs that we have earlier on. Somebody else mentioned that we take up positions or we have an identity or we want to defend that. Let's call a spade a spade. These are all just thoughts. And any thought that I entertain, which is probably not a good word for it, but any thought to which I give my energy blocks some of my energy. It depletes the amount of energy I have available for me to be present, to be in the here and now. It creates an unease in my energy system, and at its most basic level, an unease in my mind. An unease in my mind leads to dis-ease in my body. An unease in my mind leads to unease all over the place. It's you know, it's the worst pandemic going, thought. And all we have to do, as Liz said, is stop it.
One of the biggest lessons I learned, again, it's animal related thinking about what Lisa was saying, was when we acquired the dog that we currently have. She was about a year old and she'd never been inside and she'd never been socialized. And I was so anxious and eager to be, you know, the perfect dog owner, as if it exists. And so, you know, yes, this dog was going to be trained, this dog, you know, I was going to do this, that, and the other with her. And because I had all this prejudice about how other people would see, you know, reflect how her behavior would reflect on me and all of the rest of it, what I failed to do was meet the dog's energy where the dog was. And at the moment, I just thought, oh, for goodness sake, you know, no class, no training group would even have her in it because she was so hyper and wound up. And when I just thought, oh, for goodness sake, I've just had enough of this. And I stepped back and I just decided to be me. And I met the dog where the dog was. And at that point, there's my energy, her energy, a little space in the middle, and the magic happened. We formed a bond. We formed a relationship based on where we were. And then we came to cooperate and grow together. And now she's still a bit of a madam, but you know what? We muddle along quite nicely. And we're all very happy. And she's now 12. So something worked along the way. But it's that meeting another, because we, although in a sense, yes, we are all one, we are encapsulated in our own bodies and in our own history, you know, the individual experiences we've had and how we've been conditioned. We've hopefully gained a bit more insight, but, you know, we've still got all of our frills and furbelows to work with. And so in a sense, it is meeting somebody's energy where they are, and like we want to be seen, how we affect maybe the water. When the water feels seen, when energy feels acknowledged, I find it can really transform. Whether it's me seeing somebody else or another animal, or whether it's me not feeling seen and having a tantrum and deciding I need to grow up and do something about this and kind of just say, hey, you know, look at this. And take responsibility for that relationship. But so I do understand what Lisa says, that it can be very difficult to try and show people that it's how you present and allowing, because, you know, if you get up and trot on a horse, yes, you're mastering a skill, but the horse too is mastering a skill, as in having you on its back and working with you. It's very much a two-way street.
Yeah. It's all about turning up.
Yeah.
It isn't even how you turn up. It's just turning up will do the trick. You don't have to worry about how you're turning up if you actually just be.
Yeah.
So Liz, you sparked the thought in me of co-creating, because it was that when you said that we are mastering a skill, but the horse is also mastering a skill. So that was an impactful moment for me. I'm having this thought that my consciousness is only letting me take it so far. So I need your guys' help. We've talked about that we are reactive noodles in a world of reactive noodle soup, and we're all roiling and boiling and going around and interacting in one way and bouncing off of one another, et cetera, et cetera. So what would our world look like, and what would the world look like if we stopped being so a bundle of reactive noodles and start, and I need help completing that sentence. What would the world look like if we stopped being reactive and...
Can I just clarify something before anybody else jumps in? Because my analogy, and maybe it's, I don't think there's any such thing as a perfect analogy. My analogy wasn't that we were reactive noodles stirring the pot, so to speak. The point I was making was that if I am over one side of the universal pot and I wiggle my noodle in a particular fashion, it has a ripple effect out across the universe that comes back to me. If I'm stuck in thought and being reactive, I can't wiggle my noodle. Don't think I've ever said that before.
We're all trying not to laugh, but I will anyway. So.
So when I use the noodle analogy, it is that we're actually all in this together. And the more I free myself up to freely wiggle, the more I will impact others in obviously the best possible way. Not the right way or a positive way, the best possible way. It's beyond positive or negative. It's beyond even having a plan. It's back to Shelley's point. It's going with the flow and see what happens, because I'm in flow and I am actually flowing.
Greg, I'd like to... Whoa! I am out.
No, you're not, Dennis.
We can hear you.
My screen just blanked out, so I can't see anything here.
There's a metaphor somewhere, but I'm not sure.
I think the universe was sending me a message. Maybe I better not say what I can't even remember now what I was going to say. Now that was interesting. No, what I was going to say related to Greg's observation is, I think, and I hate to use this word problem, but I think our problem is we're trying to think our way out of something that you can't think your way out of. Okay, so Greg, you're asking, co-create, what would it look like? I think maybe the question is, what would it feel like? And words I keep hearing a lot lately are accepting, trusting, and allowing what is. And I think humanity is in such a mode of trying to control, push back, make things the way we think they should be, rather than accepting what is and trusting in the flow, in the process, in the intelligence of the universe, or whatever you want to call it, God, doesn't matter what word you want to use, but we're into manipulating and micromanaging this planet, all institutions, the way people behave, the way people think. I mean, we need to chill out, okay? Let's accept what is, trust, and allow the natural process, if you want to call it that, the flow of the universe, has a way of kind of taking care of things on its own. I think we can co-create and cooperate with that kind of a intelligence of the universe, I'll call it, but we get hung up in our egos. I think that's where Shelley was kind of talking about the ego and interpreting and identifying with all this stuff going around us versus, you know, what's really happening, and that aha moment that can come from being present through meditation or just being very still in the now, you know, it's that unifying factor. So But it's a feeling. It's not a, it's not, we're not going to think ourselves into that. That's all I really want to say is I think we've put way too much value as a planet on thinking. Mm-hmm. And it's gotten us into big trouble. Actually, we may actually be in a global crisis to some extent. Again, that's just a word and a concept, and I'm not trying to be dramatic about it, but I think the root issue goes back to separating ourselves from kind of living in our heart as much as we live in our head. We're out of balance. And because we're out of balance as individuals, society's out of balance, the planet is out of balance. It's a balancing thing, I think, that we're collectively maybe working our way through right now. But it starts with ourselves. We can go out and try to terraform the climate and reverse global warming. But I think there's maybe a deeper thing going on. Even COVID and the pandemic, I think, is the intelligence of the universe is trying to send us a message here if we're willing to listen to what's going on here. You know, how we could cooperate and work together rather than fight each other over the vaccine and who gets how much vaccine. And I mean, here we are again, we've got to drop these old patterns of living, I think. Anyways, I'll be quiet. I don't think I answered your question, Greg, but the key word to me is feeling. I think we've lost touch with our feelings, and we, you know, overthink everything.
I'm not sure that there's a right answer. I think it's just a discussion.
I think there might be a right answer, you know, but I think it's something that the thinking mind has a huge problem getting around. And that is, if you just let go, I know it's a phrase I use frequently, but if you just let go, if you just let go of your expectations, because when we have expectations, we tie ourselves. We nail ourselves to those expectations. If we just let go of our thoughts about ourselves, if we just let go of our thoughts about other people as well. I mean, you know, thinking is the root of all evil. It's not money. It's none of those other things. Difference is not the root of all evil, because difference is only perceived through thought. Thought is the root of all evil. So if you could stop your thinking mind, then you'd be in a different place. The place happens to be called, I think, as close to reality as we might actually get, in which case you are free, you are hooked up to what Dennis described as universal energy. You are able to influence yourself through having control of your own state of mind. You're able to influence others. You'll never control anything, by the way, in this life. We could all be sitting here, you know, talking about control now, and the meteor had hit us, and that'd be the end of us all. Dennis, it wouldn't be just your screen that goes blank. We need to just let ourselves go. We need to stop thinking that we're some kind of, we have some kind of superhuman thought-fueled power, because we're never going to figure this out, because the thinking mind can figure nothing out, because the thinking mind keeps going round in circles. If we stepped outside our circle, we'd see how mad we'd been to be in that circle for how long, and how constraining it was, and how it impacted our health, how it impacted our life, and how it impacted the life and health of those around us and the planet.
I have a question.
Michael.
First of all, thanks very much. It's my first, first call. I met Willie on an Instagram ad, and like so many things on the Instagram, you always say, is this guy real? Does he exist? And quick as a flash, here I am, and I see real human beings. Willie, I have a quick question. For those of us in the workforce, with organizations perhaps in a position of control, in the office and in the workplace and in the field, thinking and analyzing and directing is a massive part of it. No big complex organization will run on its own. And I know that individuals like myself have to bring themselves to work and do all of the things that you said focus on being, not thinking. But how do you map that across to an office setting or a workplace setting or a place where others are looking for direction, are looking for analysis? How do you balance those two?
I mean, most of my work over the last 25 years since I left the corporate world myself in 1996 has been with corporates. There are one or two well-worn corporate heads on this particular call as well. Sorry, I shouldn't have said that, Pat. A very well-worn head. There are a couple of things about a corporation. First of all, a corporation doesn't exist. It's actually a coming together of people, or in most corporations, it's not a coming together of people. And that's why corporate environments are largely dysfunctional. We need to think things through in organizations and to plan to ensure that there's some kind of glue between all the normal crazy people in the organization. Because most people are not in control of their faculties. They wouldn't understand what we're talking about here. That's not a judgment. That's simply a statement of fact backed up by about 52, 53 years research. Most people are marked absent. And therefore, you know, as a leader in an organization, or indeed a leader in a part of an organization, yeah, I need to have a vision. I need to be able to express that vision in a way that other people can say, yeah, I kind of get that, and it kind of turns me on. But I also need plans, strategies, and that kind of stuff, not because the universe works according to a plan, but because at least it galvanizes the army to kind of more or less walk in the right direction. But ultimately, I mean, there's at least one person on this call that knows how you move a part of an organization forward in an extraordinary way is to get the leadership team around a flip chart so that they can draw what their future looks like. Because we take our subconscious minds are visual. If we give our subconscious mind pictures of what we'd love our life to be like, and this goes for the corporate setting as well, and in fact, in many ways, it is even more powerful in the corporate setting because you have a group of people. And if you have a group of people of more or less like mind, the energy of that group of people is many times exponentially greater than the individual component parts that each individual brings to a team. But ultimately, if you draw your picture and give your subconscious mind something that tickles your fancy or turns you on or excites you or excites enough people enough, it's the excitement, comes back to the point that Dennis made about feeling, it's the excitement that galvanizes people into action. Real leaders know how I was going to say play with it, but that makes it sound like a game. I was going to say use it, but that sounds like manipulating. It's none of the above. Real leaders know how to be present enough so everybody else has the opportunity to be present enough as well. So enough people are present enough to be good enough to move in the direction that they want to go. But an organization will say, oh, yeah, we need plans. Oh, yeah, we need projections. Oh, yeah, we need budgets. But I told the story here a couple of weeks ago. When I put a plan to a bank in 1990, having been asked to turn the bank around, the board of the bank was horrified that there were no projections and no figures in it. And my answer to them was, well, you know, if you move in the right direction and you do the right thing, the money looks after itself. And that is true. That is true for a little business. It's true for a big business. It's true for anything and anybody in life. As I said, thought might be the root of all evil, but money's a close second. Because what do we spend most of our time thinking about? I don't know if that begins to enable us further explore that question, Michael.
No, that was a good start. I think what it is a bunch of noodles. And as you said, you've just got to set the direction for the noodles and let them be noodles on their own in some respects as well.
Well, that is certainly true these days. I mean, 50 years ago, you could kind of, or at least leaders, in inverted commas, thought they might be able to command the noodles. Whether that was true or not even 50 years ago is debatable. But as Pat O'Donnell, Pat O'D, and on the right, left, bottom corner of my screen, as he was saying the last time, still on mute. That's okay. Oh, stuck on mute. All right. Okay. That's probably the best way to keep you. Keep yeah, because otherwise he misbehaves himself. But now I've completely forgotten what I was about to say. Oh, no. As Pat was saying the last time, we live in an environment now where people who were born in the 90s or the 2000s will never do something because they're told to do it. They'll want to know why it is expected of them and what's in it for them. And that might sound like a selfish thing, but it comes back to getting all the noodles marching more or less in the right direction. If people's objectives, individuals' objectives, more or less coincide with the corporate objectives, everybody's happy. It's only when objectives diverge that people begin to misbehave, and you see all the nonsense that you do see in most corporate environments. Most unenlightened corporate environments, but unfortunately, as we sit here, that probably goes for most corporate environments. But sure, that's why we're talking.
All right. Yeah, that's very helpful. I wish I was on Pat O'D's call, because we have a level of boomers like myself. And then we have a middle management level of people born in the 90s and 2000s. And to say that they'll never do what they're told, perhaps that's becoming evident by practice, but it's good to hear, because there's certainly a different management strategy with them than there is with the boomer partners. Funnily enough, some of the greater difficulties come from the boomer partners than the millennial
managers. Oh, yeah. Old dogs, new tricks. Yeah. Sorry, Michael, just in relation to that, all of the audio of all these conversations is online. So you can revisit Pat's words of wisdom last time out. You're still on mute, Pat. That's the right place for him. Sorry, I'm only joking. You know that. Yeah.
I think his words were that we're a fine-looking group.
Something I'd like to jump in real quick, our earlier discussion about energy and this discussion about leadership. One of the things I do as a consultant, I work with CEOs and senior leadership teams, you know, and helping them with their mission, their vision and values, and creating a corporate culture that creates an environment of flow, of what I'd like to use the word. In fact, Willie and I have talked about this for quite some time, corporate coherence, or what I like to use the word is resonance. You know, if you have a tuning fork and it rings and you create resonance, it means we're kind of vibrating and resonating with each other. And to me, it's the job of the CEO and the senior leadership team to create coherence and resonance energetically within an organization. Now, that sounds like quantum physics, and actually it is. And there's research that would back that up, that what a leader really is doing on an energetic level, physically, is creating coherence and resonance between the employee, these noodles that we're talking about. I like to drop the noodle word, actually, because I think we're talking about galaxies here. We're talking about shining stars and human beings. The potential in each of our workforce is way, way, way more than many leaders give them credit for in terms of looking at their potential and abilities. I was working yesterday consulting with the COO of a company here in Tucson, and he has promoted a young lady 3 times over the last 3 years. By the way, Willie, it's Rachel. You know, I do the mindfulness coaching with Rachel, indeed. And she's a superstar. And it's amazing, because nobody can put her in a box. And it's easy for CEOs and directors and managers. You want to put all your employees conveniently in a box. You're judging them. think about it. You do performance appraisals. You've got performance standards. You've got dashboards, scorecards. You're measuring the wahoo out of your organization. But when you step back and realize how much potential is in an employee that's on fire with passion, and they get your vision, the mission and the values is in their heart. It's not just in their head. They feel it. They live it. They don't care how much money they make. They're there to come in every day, you know, and do the absolute best they can for your company. That is the level of excellence that I've seen in companies that have been distinguished with, for example, the National Baldrige Award in the United States. It's the highest award. It's given by the president for companies that have evidence of creating this culture of excellence. And it's not going, you know, they have a leadership system, they have a way of leading, but it's actually, it's that passion, it's that feeling, it's more than just all the mechanics, the budgets, the goals. The organization literally gets on fire with you know, what it is they do. So I just want to share that, because I think creating that resonance and coherence is what we're actually doing. We may not be conscious that we're really doing that, but I think that's what we're really doing.
And Greg would probably ask, sorry, I shouldn't put words in your mouth, Greg. Greg would probably ask, how do you do that? And, you know, because you talk about resonance, you talk about empowering, you talk about all these big words. And I'm an awfully simple to the point of being possibly very simple person. You turn up, because through our presence is the tide that rises all boats. You simply turn up.
Yeah, it starts with us. And if we don't do it, then we can't expect our workforce, or, you know, the folks around us, you know, it always comes back to us. And, you know, I worked with a very dysfunctional CEO once, and Gwen knows who this is, so I'm not going to mention any names, but the toxicity from the C-suite just filtered down through the whole organization. And it was the reverse of what a true leader should be, creating that culture by walking the talk and being present and listening. And if you do the reverse, and then you wonder why your culture is toxic, you need to get up in the morning and look in the mirror, because what you see in the mirror is what's causing your problems. It's not your workforce. Don't go out and beat up your workforce with a stick, because it's you. And so anyways, that's what, Willie, I think you're saying.
Well, actually, it's like a couple of years ago, I got a phone call one morning from a CEO who said that I'm having awful difficulty motivating my leadership team. And I said to her, how motivated are you this morning? And she said, oh, God, don't talk to me. I said, well, there you are.
There you go.
I was on a call yesterday, and I asked, again, I was talking to a general manager in this particular case. And we got into the kind of conversation that we move into here in this space from time to time. And I said to her, what do you think the purpose of life is? And she said, to be a beacon of joy. I talked about spreading the calm, spreading the joy earlier on, or a beacon of love. And I said to her, do you love yourself? And she said, no, not at all. I said, well, then how does that work? It all starts with you, as Dennis has just said. All starts with us.
I think as well as I just wanted to chip in there to say about change of mindset, you know, to how can I help you? Can I do for you? Other than what can you do to help me? What, you know, or how can I help you to do things better for me? You know, it's the other way around. It's here, you know, here to help others. And by doing so, it creates a better place for all.
Yeah.
Willie, I'm going to go back to what you said a minute ago about the question that I would ask. So we are resonating in consciousness, and you channeled me perfectly, but you said that the thing to do is to show up. If I could just add the word authentically to that, to show up authentically. Because I know there are times, many times in the corporate world, we show up, but we show up as someone that we think we should be, or that we think someone else thinks we should be, rather than who we are.
So, guilty.
Sorry,
Greg. Again, just to clarify, when I use the phrase "turn up," I mean actually fully.
Oh, I'm agreeing with you.
Fully.
Okay. Yeah.
And if I'm
like you, I'm simple, and I need to just clarify. It's,
but if you're all there, if I'm all here, what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
I'm a proper human being, and I can't but treat you as a proper human being too. That's when the magic happens, the magic that Liz was talking about between herself and the dog. Now, it's coming up to the hour. I want to ask people a question because Dennis and myself were talking since our last conversation about setting up a LinkedIn group. And obviously, if we set up a LinkedIn group and people join that LinkedIn group, you'll all be in touch with each other. Are people okay with that idea?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll do that. That was a piece of housekeeping. Sorry.
Excellent.
Yeah, I was going to ask if I could put my LinkedIn address, but this is even better. So, because yeah. I would love to communicate.
I will do that, Dennis. I'll do that in the next 24 hours, and I'll put you in as co-owner, and we'll just take it from there.
Sounds good.
Great.
Do you want to finish with a couple of minutes of being?
Sounds good to me.
Anyone else interested in a couple of minutes of being?
Yeah.
Couple of minutes of what John Kabat-Zinn in the University of Massachusetts would call coming to our senses. Dennis, as you said earlier on, we don't feel enough. We've kind of become immune. Our thoughts have immunized us to our feelings, our true feelings. So if we could just take a few minutes and park our thoughts in the corner, although it's actually easier than that, because if we just sit and relax for a moment, and maybe when we're comfortable with the idea, close our eyes for a moment and just notice how we feel when we close our eyes. It doesn't matter how you feel, just noticing how you feel isn't the first step on the road to awareness. It's actually awareness. And the more aware we become, the more we realize we don't have to park our thoughts, because our thoughts aren't real. They're just thoughts. So we might take a couple of nice, long, slow, deep breaths and just notice how that feels. Not think about how it feels, just notice it. Not judge whether it feels good, bad, or indifferent. Just notice the feeling of air in your nostrils. The movement of your shoulders and your chest when you breathe in and out. The rhythmic filling and emptying of your lungs, the contraction and expansion of your stomach, and the wonderful feeling of being. When we tune in our attention to the breathing, the breaths that we're taking, when we actually devote our attention, give our undivided attention to how the air feels in our nostrils, we become more and more present. More and more real. Because now we're touching reality. We're actually breathing reality. As we immerse ourselves in observing, noticing, and experiencing the feeling of the breath in our nostrils and in our lungs, we might expand the focus of our attention to notice what we're hearing as well. because every little sound we hear provides us with an opportunity to tune our attention fully into the moment in which the sound arises and passes. And every time we give our undivided attention to a sound in the moment that it arises, we deepen our experience and presence in the only place and time that we can be, which is here and now. And that is self-liberation. So let's just tune into the rhythm of our breathing, noticing the sounds that we hear. Get in tune with that rhythm. And once you're in tune with that rhythm, pick one of those breaths and number it, number 5. And at your own speed, with each breath that you take, count down one breath at a time until you get to 0. And then we can open our eyes and be a little more. I'm cool if you're cool. I'm good if you're good. And even if you're not good, I'm good anyway. I'll put on my own LinkedIn page tomorrow the link to this. I will email everybody who's on my own email list the link to this tomorrow as well. I email everybody about the LinkedIn group when I have it set up as well. And sure, we'll all get together as and when we turn up. No expectations one way or another. Let's go with the flow.
Very much.
Very much, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Bye.
Take care, everyone.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Willie.
Bye.